welcome to this week's edition of the Video News InScreen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from InScreen Media is back at home this week, back from his European travels. Hey, Colin, you got home safely, I trust?
I sure did, and it's good to have my feet firmly planted on the soil of California for a while. I guess we'll have to see how that goes. But there has been a very busy week this week in our industry. Lots of data floating around, and we're going to talk about some of that. Also, lots of really interesting announcements this week too. But I think we're going to start off with the Cisco VNI. And of course, we had Cisco on the podcast last time that they did this. An equally interesting, I think, report. And you're going to kick us off because we both wrote about it, but you wrote about it as well. So why don't you kick us off and tell us what the VNI told us?
Yeah. So for listeners that are not familiar with the VNI, this is Cisco's Visual Networking Index. It's a forecast that they do every year, a couple times per year, basically forecasting what internet traffic is going to look like out over the next 5 years. And for a while now, the key data point in these forecasts is that video is going to be, already is, and is going to become an even more dominant form of traffic going forward. So that was no surprise this time around. Cisco forecasting that video will account for 82% of global internet traffic in 2021. That's basically in line with prior forecasts. But one new number that, from a video perspective, that was new this time around is that Cisco is now saying that live video is going to account for 13% of all global internet video by 2021. That's a 15x increase over the course of 5 years. And Cisco is obviously very bullish about live video. It attributed the growth in live to, according to their release, streaming of TV apps and personal live streaming on social networks. So a good way to interpret that is that we've seen a big growth in Facebook Live and other social platforms that are allowing for live video streaming. And then, of course, on TV network apps, we've seen lots and lots of live streaming of sports and also of events. Actually, one example I thought on the Facebook side was just this past Sunday, there were apparently 76 million views on Facebook Live of the Ariana Grande benefit concert in Manchester. So just another data point of how Facebook Live has grown. So clearly live is going to become a big part of the video mix. But actually the biggest part that Cisco believes, biggest part of the video mix going forward, is going to continue to be long form VOD. So that's, of course, services like Netflix and Amazon and others. That's, Cisco believes, will account for 57% of all video traffic. That is followed by short form VOD. So that could be, you know, little clips in your news feed, et cetera. And then, of course, onto the live streaming, with live video streaming, which is, again, at 13%, up 15x. So video, a key part of the Cisco forecast. And then just a couple other things I thought were noteworthy, Colin. I know you wrote about this as well, so you'll jump in here in a second. But Cisco also putting a big emphasis on 4K TV, saying that the 4K TV will increase from 2% of video to 21% of video in 2021. And Cisco sees 663 million, or 56% of connected flat panel TVs, being able to support 4K TV. That would be up from just 85 million in 2016. One other thing Cisco sees a lot of growth in are connected TV devices, or as it calls them, digital media adapters, DMAs. So Cisco sees those increasing from 139 million in 2017 to over 261 million in 2021. And the traffic running through these DMAs is going to increase from 4.3 exabytes per month to 14.2 exabytes per month. So that's give or take about a tripling of the amount of video traffic that's going to be going over these DMAs in a 5-year period. So Those were some of the highlights, I thought, of the Cisco VNI forecast. Again, video, very important part of overall internet traffic over the next 5 years. Live video becoming a bigger and bigger part. And these DMAs and 4K TV also becoming a big players as well. So what were your takes, Colin?
Yeah, very interesting data, I thought. I just wanted to mention, we should probably double check this, but I think the live being 13% is actually 13% of the total video load, not the total bandwidth load in 2021. But given that video is such a huge part, 82% of the total bandwidth, it's pretty close to being 13. So it's probably like 10% overall. And that really, I mean, to me, stood out as the biggest headline from the data. Such huge growth from 3% in 2016 to 13% of the video load in 2021. And I actually went back and I asked them for a little bit more detail on this, because as you and I both know, Will, it's a pretty complex place, live online now. It's many, many different components. And I talked to Struti Jain, and she's a senior analyst with Cisco. And what she told me was that it really is comprised of four buckets. Well, I sort of broke it out as four buckets. And there's sports carried on streaming linear TV channels. That's the sort of thing you'd see in these virtual MVPDs like Sling TV and Hulu. There's live stream sports and services like Fox Sports Go and Fubo. Fox Sports Go is a really good example, or GoPro, I suppose, would be another good example of some of those live stream sports. And Red Bull is also doing a lot. And then you've got local events like high school football, church services, a whole bunch of that going on too. And then the fourth bucket was this social live broadcasting in services like Facebook Live. And as you say, of the four, certainly Cisco thinks that that's the biggest portion. And I got to tell you, I believe it, because when you think about the live events that in the other the three buckets that I enumerated, they're not going on all the time. They're happening infrequently. Well, you know, maybe on a daily basis or weekly basis. They're not happening every day. And what we see happening is with the user-generated live streams, Will, is it's just becoming a way of communicating. People are broadcasting their daily lives. And I thought it was really interesting. I talked with Facebook a couple of months ago in London about this, and I talked with Matthew Corbin, and they are just putting such a huge emphasis on live. It's a really important part of what Facebook is doing now, and it really, as you say, it really seems to be paying off with this Ariana Grande concert and just the general chatter level of live broadcasting on Facebook. So for me, that was a really big part. The other thing that really caught my eye in the data was you mentioned the Ultra HD, I think. But what wasn't such a big part was virtual reality and AR. So Ultra HD, 21% of the video load by 2021. But virtual reality really not making any impression at all, just 0.6% of the IP video bandwidth by 2021. And again, I got to tell you, I feel like that's about right. I generally am sitting, I'm still fairly skeptical, to be honest, about the viability of VR in the home setting for us to all be sitting down and watching VR together, certainly with the technology as it is right now. It would just be, I think, it's just too weird for people to sit down to watch a movie, quote, together, but all be completely separated in their own world. So I just don't see that working, although the very specific special applications I think will do extremely well, like flight simulation, doctors doing trial operations, stuff like that, where immersive environments are really, I think, really, really helpful. But I don't know, I just don't see it working in the living room. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of stuff has to happen, put it that way, in order for it to be much bigger in the living room. And we do still seem to be quite a ways away from that, which was reflected, I think, sort of in the Cisco forecast. Live is right here. It's happening right now. And, you know, again, it was interesting hearing your conversation with Cisco, how they break out the categories. I guess I would put a little bit more weight on the live sports. I feel like that's a category with the Olympics and the Super Bowl and March Madness and others that's already becoming pretty well ingrained behaviors. And I see that only getting bigger as we go forward.
I think I agree. I think there is something in the next 5 years, something very big is going to happen in live sports. And there was something you said a couple or three podcasts ago that really, really, I think, resonated with me. And that's this idea that the sports providers are going to start selling special packages. You know, like, okay, you can buy access to the full Olympics for the 3 weeks. You know, they'll be selling add-on packages to live sports on TV. Right. And I really think there's something to that. And I just see that really expanding pretty dramatically, particularly as we see people moving away from traditional television, you know, ESPN seeing big declines in viewership. I think as people move more towards the virtual MVPDs and these online services, that there will be a big uptick in the viewership of sports. Very big audiences, whereas the other things that I think we were talking about will be not quite so big audiences for those smaller events. So maybe there is something to what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, the VNI is available free as a complimentary download. We have just scratched the surface of some of the great data that's in there. And, you know, Cisco, I think, really has done the industry a great service by continuing to put a lot of work into the VNI and make it available completely free. So we encourage listeners to take a look at that. But we also wanted to talk about another topic on today's podcast, Colin, which relates to video app development. You just published a white paper on this topic. You're going to share some of the key findings. And we also observed that a company called UITV had announcement this week supporting Roku. And they're an video app engine, basically, that allows for content providers to quickly roll out and easily maintain applications across different platforms. So we're going to just touch on that briefly as well. But why don't you tell us about the white paper?
I sure will. The white paper is available for free from the Endscreen Media website. It's called Minding the Store: Why a Merchandising Mindset is Critical to Video App Success. Boy, I've got to get better at shorter titles. That's a very long title.
Something snappy, please.
Yeah. But, you know, the great thing about this paper, sort of, I've been wanting to write this paper for a while. And another video app developer called Massive came to me with pretty much the same idea, that they're really focused on helping video providers do a much better job in the merchandising through their apps. And so it was a great meeting of the minds, if you like. And so they sponsored the creation of this paper. And basically, what I'm talking about in this paper, Will, is I think that a lot of video providers are still thinking about their apps in the wrong way. They're sort of thinking about them in the way that we've always thought about guides. That is, it's the way that consumers get access to the video that they're paying for. So, you know, it's just as a guide. But the thing is, I really think that video operators need to be thinking about it just a little bit differently. They need to be thinking about the app as their video store. And even if it's a subscription service, I think they should still be thinking that way. And the reason is pretty simple. We definitely want consumers to get to content quicker. And one of the ways you do that is by personalizing the interface. But you also want to make sure that you achieve the goals of the organization. And sometimes they aren't necessarily congruent with the idea that a consumer gets to the content that they want immediately. And this idea was sort of crystallized for me really well by a gentleman called Brendan Hull, who is who works for BT. And at TV Connect this year, he gave a presentation about they've completely rewritten the BT Vision interface. And he said that this interface now is completely data driven. And to illustrate his point, so when you do a search, or when you first bring up the display is customized to what the consumer wants to see. But there's also a whole bunch of pay-per-view stuff that's mixed in there as well. That BT wants the consumer to see, because they think that, you know, this has a lot, these movies have a lot of popular appeal. And the great thing about the BT interface is, so when it first paints, it sort of paints with your personalized list and this list of pay-per-view stuff. But you can actually hide that pay-per-view stuff with the click of one button and just focus on the stuff that you have access to and that you want to watch. But the next time you bring up this interface, the pay-per-view stuff is back there again. So this idea that what you actually want to do with the interface is you want to sort of bring together the business demands and what the consumer wants to paint that display afresh every time somebody comes to it. And so this is where this idea of having a merchandising mindset comes from. And that's what I talk a lot about in the paper. And there's a lot of stuff in there about what sort of architectures you want to be looking for this to work, and all of the other details about the market demands, why you really need it. Because I tell you, if there's one thing all of us are aware of, is that change is the new norm in this business, and everything about our business is changing, from the technology to the way we approach monetization. So all of that's in there. So once again, you can just come to the Endscreen website and download that for free. It's called Mining the Store: Why a Merchandising Mindset is Critical to Video App Success.
Yeah, I like the way you phrase that, Colin, a merchandising mindset, because this is obviously something that retailers have known since the beginning of time, how to display merchandise in a certain way in order to engage customers and drive more product sale. And I think this is the same kind of thing that video providers are facing right now. And there are just so many choices these days that being able to use data, what a customer's or viewer's prior behavior exhibits about them, to be able to put video choices in front of them that are more likely to resonate, just seems like a kind of a merchandising 101 skill that they need to learn. And interesting comparison here, I think, always with Amazon, which, of course, if any company online has a merchandising mindset, it's them, right? They are certainly starting to do that with video in a big way. And we've talked about that before on this podcast, that they very much are pulling together data from across the user's profile, not just what they watched, but what they bought, what they browsed, what they searched for, et cetera, and then surfacing video content in a way that makes sense for them, and promoting various SVOD services that are in the Amazon Channels program in order to drive more subscriptions to them. And we've certainly heard anecdotally from some of those SVOD providers that are in the Channels program that Amazon is doing a fantastic job and that they're seeing a lot of new subscribers coming in. HBO's CEO even went so far as to point to the business that Amazon is helping drive for HBO now as part of the justification for not renewing their content licensing deal with Amazon. So clearly, if there's any one company in the video space that has that merchandising mindset, it's Amazon, and they're raising the bar for everybody else.
They sure are. And, you know, this is just such an important concept. So I hope people get a chance to download the paper, Will, because it really goes into some of the details. I mean, you put your finger on something very interesting about the concept of the store, and it's something that this has been running through my head so much over the last few weeks as I've worked on the paper. You know, really, one of the problems with apps today is that in order to implement something new, you have to update the app. And that's really problematic, because it means you have to update the app across all the devices, and that takes a long time. And gosh, you may even have to have them reapproved, and that can take even longer. That's why this idea of driving the interface with data is so important, because then the app really reconfigures itself each time you bring it up, and bingo, you can do what you want without having to change the app at all. That's the really key thing here. You don't want to change your app to do your selling, to do your merchandising. So
yeah, I think that's one of the props we mentioned earlier, this UITV, which this week announced support for Roku, which now means they're basically supporting all the major platforms. And Turner's Filmstruck SVOD service was the first one to launch with them. And I think that's, you know, what makes their proposition pretty interesting, is the idea of using one engine to drive the app development across these platforms, and then the maintenance and updates, to your point, that as they release new features for the app, they get delivered throughout all the different platforms where the app is available. And I see that sort of capability as being increasingly important, Colin.
I do too. And, you know, the thing I love about companies like Massive and UI, if you are a video provider, you should be working with these guys, because they really know how to help you really engage your customers and show your stuff in the best light. And Filmstruck is a great example. That is, I don't know if anybody's played with this interface. If you haven't, you should. It is an awesome interface. It's really well laid out. I love the way Filmstruck is approaching this. They're not just putting a massive library out there and letting people fumble through it themselves. They're really curating the experience. They're bringing in new stuff and taking out new stuff. They're having themes like Kurosawa theme, or you know, another director, or maybe mafia movies or something. They're creating a constantly changing, interesting approach to movies. And I think if you're a movie buff, it's a must. UI, one of the things I love about the UI approach, Will, is that they have come up with this a GPU engine. And what that allows them to do is it allows them to create a single application code base, which is written in C++, to get a little bit technical. But what this allows them to do is it allows them to interact directly with the graphics processing unit that's running on the device that they're using. And that means that they get really fabulous performance, and they can do things that other people can't, to create just this really engaging, interesting interface that's just a joy to use. I think this is actually a really important concept. It makes discovery part of the entertainment. It's fun to get in and look through what's available and look at all of the great movies that are inside Filmstruck, and the application just really helps that. So hope people get a chance to go and check out Filmstruck. It's a really great service, and the app on Roku is just a joy to use.
I think you've sold me on giving it a look, Colin.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just great. If you love films, it's the thing to have.
You earned your commission from Turner. Just kidding.
Anyway, I wish.
I think that's it for this week. All right, Colin. Next week, we're going to be back together. We are hoping to have a guest with us, so we'll wait to confirm that. But hopefully, we'll be discussing some more industry research next week.
I sure hope so, too.
All right, Colin, great chatting as always. And thanks, everybody, for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News Endscreen Media Podcast. We'll see you all again next week.